Hi, Nat Doig here. Today's episode is all about the night I spent in York's most haunted pub, the Golden Fleece Hotel. There's live audio from the night, interviews with guests at the hotel, a deeper dive into one of the famous ghost stories associated with the inn, and finally, I chat with Northern ghost expert, the brilliant Rob Kirkup. As always, we cover scary subjects, including some gruesome deaths. And I know I promised an episode on the mysterious Biggleswade tunnels, and that episode will be here before the end of May, I promise, including new ghost stories with links to the tunnels. I just need a bit more extra time gathering evidence. I'll give you a full update when I hold the YouTube live stream on Wednesday, the 1st of May at 7 p.m. British summertime. Listen out for the details about the live stream later in the show. Just one last thing. You may want to listen to this episode on headphones, particularly the first 15 minutes or so, because the live recordings I made during the night at the Golden Fleece were on my mobile phone, and some of the strange knocks and floorboard creaks will be easier to hear using headphones. Welcome to A Weird in the Wade, Weird Wonder. A Weird Wonder is where I take you on a journey further afield from Biggleswade and Bedfordshire. We'll travel to a different location. We'll investigate a new and unusual story. We'll explore aspects of history and the paranormal we've not looked at before. Today, we visit the Golden Fleece Hotel in York, a place renowned for the uncanny and unexplained. Some say it is haunted by at least 15 ghosts. I challenged myself to stay the night there and to share with you what I experienced. Listen on if you dare to find out what woke me repeatedly in the night and how my fellow guests at the hotel fared during their stays. Setting the scene. I'm staying in the Golden Fleece pub, which is one of York's oldest pubs. It has stood on this site, I think, since the early 16th century. The building that I'm currently in is 17th century. It's named the Golden Fleece because the wool trade was very big in York. It's a very historic pub. It's also a pub that is renowned to be haunted, and sometimes it's quoted that there are 5 ghosts, and sometimes it is that there are 7 ghosts, and I have even seen 17 ghosts being quoted. It's not quiet and still, but it is actually really lovely. You can hear the sound of a whirring extractor fan, which actually does not bother me at all. It's the kind of white noise that will actually help me sleep, but I'm guessing once the kitchen closes, the extractor fan will be switched off. My impressions so far of the Golden Fleece. It is a very lovely historic pub. The front bar is quite a plain bar. The back bar is where they serve food, and there are old settles and wood beams, and there is a beer garden. The bedroom that I'm staying in is Catherine's room. It is a lovely size with a double bed. There are 2 enormous paintings in this room, one of Charles I and the other one is of Charles II. The one of Charles I is what you see from the end of the bed. So I'm sitting up in bed
the minute recording this, and I can see Charles the First. He's kind of larger than life size. And it is a little disconcerting because you do kind of feel like there's someone there in the corner of the room. So I don't know if they've done that on purpose. The atmosphere in the pub, I think, is actually really nice. You can feel the age, just by looking around, but even, you know, knew nothing about history, I think you would be able to tell that you're in a space that had seen a lot of different things over the years. I've had so far one unusual experience in the bar, which was that I was sitting at a table waiting for my food to arrive. I wasn't expecting it to arrive because I'd only just ordered it. And I was sitting next to the fireplace. So I was on a little settle for like two people next to the fireplace. And I was like the first seat and table in the bar. The bar was not busy. And I was suddenly aware that somebody was coming towards my table and was going to either put down a glass or take my glass, which was full of, at that point, I'd got a pint of Doom Bar. And so I looked up to kind of see what they were doing, and there was no one there. But I really felt as if I saw someone coming in and leaning over. Now, obviously, I've mentioned before that I am visually impaired, so I'm used to sometimes mistaking things like shadows or movement. I don't quite see what the thing is that's moved. But in this situation, there wasn't really anybody nearby. So it wasn't like somebody moved and I just misinterpreted how far away they were from me or how near. So I don't know why I had that sudden kind of impression that someone was coming to put a drink on my table, but that's what it really felt like. I really felt like somebody was putting a glass down and they were ready to sit down, basically where I was sitting. So right next to the fire. So otherwise everything here so far has been really lovely, and you know, like I say, it feels like a really nice place to relax up here in the bedroom, and the pub is definitely somewhere to have good food and listen to live music and just sort of chat with your friends.
Overnight. It's 1:45 a.m. and I've just been woken by the sound of floorboards creaking quite loud and sounding as if somebody was walking, but possibly not in my room, maybe next door or above. So that's completely possible, except everything is really quiet now because, you know, everybody from the pub has gone home. It's 2 a.m. I've been awake for about 15 minutes. And I've just heard what I can only describe as the sound of furniture being dragged from below, but from quite far away below, towards where the back bar is. So yeah, as if someone was moving furniture around in the back bar. Again, there isn't anyone down there working. Everyone has gone home. Well, at least as far as I'm aware, they tell you that there's nobody here after 12:30 at night. I'm going to attempt to go back to sleep. Don't worry, that whimpering sound wasn't a ghost. It was me having a nightmare. And here's what I thought once I awoke.
So I survived my night in the Golden Fleece in York. I did wake a few times in the night. I didn't feel frightened. Even when that loud noise woke me, I was probably scared for about 20 seconds. However, I have a confession to make. I did sleep with the lamp on. Only one of the lamps. They've got big red lampshades over them, so they don't actually cast out a lot of light. But I didn't want to be in complete darkness here. It's a very big room, and I find sleeping in large rooms when they're completely dark, which I think this one would have been because it's facing an internal courtyard. So it would have been really dark. And even though I'm not afraid of the dark as such, I thought I'd rather have that lamp on as a bit of comfort. And then I actually wondered if that made it worse, because once I take my glasses off, I am technically blind. I wouldn't be able to read anything on a eye test chart. And I was kind of like, at least in the dark, I wouldn't see anything. But because I've left the light on, I might. There was also a mirror in the wardrobe at the side of the bed. So I piled up the pillows so I couldn't see myself in the mirror. I could see the top of the mirror. But I don't like sleeping with mirrors near the bed at all. I find that really unnerving. So I didn't see anything in the mirror, but I tried really hard not to look. So yeah, that's my confession, that I was a bit of a scaredy cat. But I'm very pleased that I did stay here. It's a lovely pub. Yeah, there's definitely strange noises in the night. I know a lot of people say that they feel that they're being watched while they're in this room. Well, because of the big paintings, Charles I and Charles II, you do feel like you're being watched now because they're there watching you. So I'm wondering if that's been done on purpose, because it kind of makes it feel more legitimate, that feeling of being watched. I don't know. It wasn't a scary feeling. In no way did I feel like I've got to get out of here. And I have been to places where I really didn't like the atmosphere and I wouldn't have wanted to stay. I've stayed in places that I did find really uncomfortable, or, you know, did not enjoy my night's sleep. I wouldn't categorise here as being in that category at all. It was actually really cosy. And on the temperature thing, so last night it was very cold in here and I'd been feeling very hot downstairs, and I came back up here and was warm enough, and then I suddenly got cold probably around about 8 o'clock in the evening, and I had a shower to warm myself up. And yet in the night I was stiflingly hot, and now the radiator's come on this morning and it's really warm. I've actually had to switch the radiator down. So yeah, the temperature in this room does fluctuate, which is probably just down to the heating. I'm guessing they didn't have the heating on last night. Why would you, when the pub's full? The heat'll rise, and I'm guessing there's no point, but you have the heat coming on in the morning because the pub's been empty overnight. So I don't know, maybe that's why. But yes, that's it for me. I'm going to go downstairs now and have some breakfast and take some photographs of the pub while I have it all to myself.
Over breakfast, I was lucky enough to interview my fellow guests who had spent the night in the Golden Fleece as well.
So I'm Josh and I'm 15 and I've never really believed in the paranormal very much.
But you're interested
but
in
I'm
it.
But interested in it still.
From a kind of scientific and sceptic kind of...
Both sides. Yeah.
You're like me then, I've got an open mind.
Yeah.
So, which room were you staying in?
The master suite.
Oh, right on the top?
Yep.
On the top, yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
The Minster.
Yeah, the Minster. So you were...
It's Minster, isn't it?
Yeah. Don't worry, Minster suite. So, has anything spooky happened to you while you're staying here in that room?
Not while we've been specifically in the room, but
no.
While we were downstairs in the pub, my glass had been moved without my mum or me touching it.
Okay, so where were you sitting?
So we were sat on the second table in from the doors.
Okay, the other side of the fireplace?
Yeah, the other side of the fireplace. And what had happened is I'd been on my phone, my mum had been on hers, And then I went to reach for my glass and it had been moved off of my beer mat.
Ah.
And because of gravity, my beer mat had slid down to the other side of the table because it's an angled table, but the glass itself had moved.
Yeah, and although it is an old pub with kind of sloping floors, it's not quite that sort of slopey, is it?
It's not slopey enough to move a whole glass.
No, and did it still have stuff in it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was heavy. Oh, cool. And I'm guessing that didn't scare you, that was just...
No, it was just kind of cool.
Yeah, it's kind of curious, isn't it? Yeah, shocked. Yeah. Like, what's going on there?
No, my first reaction was to turn to my mum and say, did you move it?
Okay. And you didn't? No, not even to play a trick? No.
I'm 13 and I come from Derbyshire.
And are you here on holiday?
Yes.
Okay, and which room are you staying in?
I'm staying in Lady Peckett's room.
Okay, and has anything spooky or strange happened while you've been staying there?
Well, we heard the tap running last night, and on the first night Mum's like, did you poke me? And I was messaging my friends, so...
You weren't anywhere near Red to poke her?
No, and a bang happened from Mum's side of the room, so...
Okay, and you heard it?
Yeah.
Were you asleep? Did it wake you up, or were you awake when it happened?
I was awake, but only just.
Only just, yeah. Otherwise, have you enjoyed staying here? It's not frightened you?
It's not frightened me, no.
No.
And I've enjoyed staying. That's kind of why I came.
I think all of us. That's why we came, isn't it?
Yeah.
But have you had a good time in York?
Yes.
And would you recommend the Golden Fleece?
100%.
They like to give them some good advertising.
Yes.
That's brilliant. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Have you been enjoying your stay at the Golden Fleece?
I have. I've been loving it.
Brilliant. And have you had any spooky experiences?
I have. Had a three-night stay, or will be having a three-night stay. We're on second night so far. Mm-hmm. First night, we woke up in the middle of the night because we was planning to come down and have a tour around. We came down, didn't see anything, so we went back up. We got back into bed, got all comfy. I was just about to drift off to sleep.
Yeah.
And I turned around, told my daughter off because I thought she was poking and prodding me.
Yeah.
And she wasn't.
No.
So I've obviously been poked, and then there was a tap at the side of me.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't me. Wasn't her.
Yeah.
Then last night we heard water trickling down from the bathroom. Daughter thought it was her drinking. I said, no, stop drinking.
No.
So she stopped drinking. You could hear the water still.
Yeah.
But it was quite random with the way that it was coming down. It wasn't a constant, it was just...
So it wasn't like a dripping tap, it was actually like water running down a wall or something?
Yeah. It just like a little trickle and then it stopped.
Yeah.
And then it trickled again. But it was just random how it was trickling down. It was quite weird on how it was doing. She's like, no it's not. Like, it is, listen. And then she heard it when I didn't, and then I heard it when she didn't, and then we heard it together.
Yeah.
So it was...
Yeah, that's interesting. And you're in the Peckett?
Yeah, we're in Lady Peckett's room.
Yeah. And would you recommend staying at the Golden Fleece?
Yeah. And so you were supposed to have come with your Nana, weren't you? But she chickened out.
Yeah.
So you got lumbered with me instead.
But I bet you'll regret it now because you've had a great time.
No, she's still pleased.
Would she be frightened?
Yeah.
Oh.
It just made you even more curious, didn't it?
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons I wanted to do this particular episode of the podcast was because a lot of the paranormal TV and radio that you watch or listen to, quite often people are running around frightened or screaming.
They over-dramatise it as well.
Yeah, they over-dramatise it. And I just wanted to show that you can stay somewhere and, yes, you might hear something strange or you might see something, you know, unusual, and it might have a very... you know, unusual atmosphere, but actually it's not necessarily frightening.
No, it's quite calming as well.
Yeah, I think it's got a nice atmosphere here.
Yeah, there's nothing frightening about it. It's nice, it's calm.
But there are definitely some unusual noises and
experiences
that people report. So yes, thank you so much.
No, that's fine.
Thank you to all of you for being interviewed. It's been lovely talking with you. And thank you.
Welcome. I really hope you enjoyed the recordings from my stay at the Golden Fleece in York just now. I'll tell you more about the pub's history my experiences there, and some of the most famous ghost stories associated with the hotel in a moment. And after that, I chat with the fantastically knowledgeable, on all things ghostly, Rob Kirkup, as we talk York spectres and spooks. But first, a quick news flash or two. This Wednesday the 1st of May 2024, I will be doing a live YouTube stream at 7 p.m. London time, where I'll tell you all about the other uncanny happenings during my stay in York, well as sharing news about the Biggleswade tunnels. You'll also be able to ask me questions during a live Q&A, so please send me your questions now, if you have any, and if you're listening before the 1st of May, obviously. You can contact me on the podcast socials or at weirdinthewade@gmail.com, and all these links are in the show description where you're listening now. If you're listening to this episode after the 1st of May, then a recording of the live stream will be available in all the usual places. My second news flash is that the Weird in the Wade merchandise shop is now open, and we're selling mugs, bags and stickers, and soon to be selling t-shirts. You can find the shop at weirdinthewade.tmil.com, and that's Tmil spelt T-E-E-M-I-L-L. So that's weirdinthewade.tmil.com. All the links, again, are in the show description and on the blog. The mugs and bags feature the podcast cat logo and either say Team Weird, or this bag, or if it's a mug, this mug might be haunted. Now, I cannot guarantee that all items will be haunted, but some of them might be. And all proceeds made from the shop are ploughed back into making the podcast. The Golden Fleece. As you heard in my recordings, the Golden Fleece is a very old pub, dating from at least 1503, when it appears in the city records for the first time. The current building dates from about 100 years later, save for the front of the pub, which was added around 200 years ago. The building is unusual in that it has no foundations and is built on stilts, which rest under the ground. This is said to lead to the pub's rather off-kilter appearance and general unevenness, with its floors, walls, windows and doors being, well, a bit skew-whiff and sloping. It reminds me of being on an old ship. The pub is opposite the Shambles, York's famous medieval street, and is a stone's throw away from Whipmawopma Gate, the world's smallest street with the greatest name. I believe it means what a street. The Golden Fleece is narrow, but very long once inside. It has a plain bar at the front, known as the top bar, which is a 19th century addition, and a back bar, which sports a skeleton sitting on a bar stool. Above the front door, there is a model of a golden sheep suspended. I've certainly never spent the night anywhere that was quite as weirdly creaky, and it really is a place where unexplained things go bump in the night, as you've heard. The Golden Fleece has been described as the most haunted pub in York, and even the most haunted pub in Britain, with reportedly 5 to 15 ghosts haunting its crooked and quirky rooms. I've even come across 17 ghosts being quoted on some blogs. I may have to come back to the pub in later episodes to do its many stories justice. I mean, it has everything from a malevolent Civil War spirit to a Victorian pickpocket ghost, Roman legionnaires marching through the cellar, and a mysterious phantom woman in black haunting the stairs and hallways. I'm going to focus on one story in particular today, though, about a phantom Canadian airman. And then I'll look at the stories that are specifically associated with the room where I stayed, Catherine's room. The Canadian Airman. You'll find this tale told on many websites, YouTube videos, in guidebooks, and on ghost walks. The story goes that the upper floor of the Golden Fleece, the Minster Suite, is haunted by a figure seen in full Royal Canadian Air Force uniform. This tall, imposing apparition has been seen just standing, staring down at guests, never moving nor speaking, just staring. Then the phantom just fades out of view. Many who have glimpsed this military spectre believe at first that it is an airman who's staying at the hotel until he evaporates like a mist. The room is also associated with people being poked, pinched, and touched whilst they stay there. And this too has been attributed to this ghostly airman. The tale attached to this unnerving apparition is that he is a Royal Canadian Air Force man, sometimes named Jeff Munro, who during World War II fell or jumped to his death from the upper window. Or some say it was the larger bay window on the first floor that he fell from, which would then mean that he's haunting the Shambles Suite. I had read reports about an American guest at the hotel who claimed that Jeff Munro's spirit followed her back home to North America, but that was all I knew before I stayed at the Fleece. Once I was at the pub and talking with guests and visitors, many seemed to know this airman's ghost story. And out of all the ghost stories attached to the Golden Fleece, this seemed like the one I could most readily research. I hoped that, like my research into Biggleswade's Golden Pheasant Pub, I might find records or a news article about the tragedy which struck the Golden Fleece and this Canadian airman. But I'm afraid to say, I actually found nothing. No news articles about any tragic deaths, accidents or suicides during the 20th century, including during the Second World War, which I paid particular attention to. I found no death records in York in the 1940s for any man with the surname Munro, which did surprise me. You might wonder if somehow the newspapers didn't cover a death like this at the pub at a time of war, and maybe they didn't. But if I tell you that the local paper did run a story about a husband and wife who were residents of the Golden Fleece in 1950, driving a car without proper license to Clitheroe, and then both being fined, I think we can safely say that a tragic, mysterious death associated with the pub would have been covered, wartime or not. It's far more newsworthy than driving without a proper driving license to Clitheroe. The only other news article I could find relating to crime or disruption at the Golden Fleece is about an unfortunate horse dealer called William Milner, who in January 1899 was thrown out of the pub for using bad language and arguing. Milner, disgruntled by this treatment, returned to the Golden Fleece later the same night, causing more of a ruckus, leading to the police being called. Milner's court case was a kind of trophy case brought because the licensed victuallers of York felt that the police were not fining disorderly customers and simply seeing them off the premises and letting them go free. Milner appears to be the straw that broke the camel's back for the landladies and lords of York. The only other references to the Fleece I could find in the newspapers were frequent advertisements for a Saturday auction of household items and valuations during the late 19th and early 20th century, and this was held in the pub front bar. And there was the odd advert for chambermaids, managers, and notices informing of the new licensees of the Fleece as they changed over the years. The pub's news footprint is really unremarkable. I'm sure if there had been any suspicious deaths associated with the pub, they would have shown up in my searches. Then I stumbled across an article from only 30 years ago, 1994, and it's the first mention that I have found in the press that states that the pub is haunted, though the Fleece clearly already had a reputation at the time. The article shed a different light on the Canadian airman story. In this version of the tale, an American tourist, 40-year-old April Keenan, had a rather unsettling stay at the Golden Fleece. During her time there, she was tormented by an unseen force, pulling her hair, touching her feet and arms, I'm guessing she was glad to go home after that. But on arriving back in Quincy, North California, where she lived, she found that the disturbing phenomena continued to happen. The Burton Mail reported that Mrs. Keenan discovered a note which claimed that the ghost who had followed her halfway across the world from the Fleece was named Jeff Monroe and was a Royal Canadian Air Force man. Monroe had fallen to his death out of the hotel window. So it seems that the first mention of the Canadian airman originates with April Keenan, when she received the mysterious note whilst home in California. The note gave the strange phenomena which had been targeting her an identity. The uncanny happenings at the hotel definitely precede 1994, but the explanation of who was causing them originated thousands of miles away in California. The news article does not explain if the note was written by a psychic or a medium or by the poltergeist himself. The implication in the article is that the ghost wrote it. Then in 1998, 4 years later, Kate Curry told the York Press that her late husband Jack had been in touch with the landlady of the Golden Fleece about this particular phantom airman for a book that he was writing. Jack had been convinced that the spirit of Jeff Monroe was back in York and tampering with his word processor as he attempted to write the story of April Keenan's experiences. But the landlady of the Golden Fleece assured him that Mrs. Keenan was no longer experiencing the haunting and that Jeff Monroe had, quote, passed over and gone into the light. I'll be honest with you, this is not what I expected to discover. I really hoped there was historical evidence to back up the Canadian Air Force man story. You see, there were Canadian airmen based just 10 miles away northwest of York at Linton-on-Ouse RAF base during the war. In fact, many Royal Canadian Air Force personnel were based in Yorkshire and in the rest of the UK. But I could find no records of deaths or incidents involving Royal Canadian Air Force personnel which were anything like the story at the Golden Fleece. And yet there were news stories during the 1940s about Canadian airmen and Canadian Army. One of them featured a runaway tractor. So I'm sure if there'd been a suspicious death, it would have been reported. I'll leave it up to you to make your own mind up. Did the spirit of a World War II airman follow April Keenan back to California? Did he reappear in York to haunt Jack's word processor? Or is he still at the Golden Fleece, appearing to unwary guests? Or maybe it's a mix of wishful thinking to explain some strange occurrences and a good story for the local papers and the pub. It strikes me that the Golden Fleece is a phenomenon-driven haunting where many have experienced odd and unusual things, but no historical narrative seems to explain what's happening. And in that vacuum, different stories can flourish, be embellished in each retelling. And the folklore of the pub continues to change and evolve. Catherine's Room. If we take Catherine's Room, for example, where I stayed, the following phenomena have been reported over the years. A shadowy figure is seen standing at the window. A secret room was found in the year 2000 and turned into an ensuite. That room has strange pools of water appearing in it when all the taps and shower are switched off. Some guests have said that the bathroom door sometimes gets stuck as if someone is holding the door handle to prevent them entry or exit. Many guests say that they feel like they are being watched when they stay in that room. Yet there is no historical explanation or character associated with this room, so it's definitely a phenomena-driven set of hauntings. I knew all these stories vaguely about the room before I visited, but I tried not to investigate it more deeply. Obviously, you know that I slept with the light on. I also felt like I was being watched, but the two huge paintings of Charles I and II really do create that feeling. I wonder if they've been added as a way to explain that feeling for guests. If the paintings weren't there, would I still have felt like I was being watched? The only issue I had with the bathroom, which is in the secret room, was that the extractor fan inside would not switch off. I did, on the morning that I left, have the sensation that there was someone standing at the window. This was whilst I cleaned my teeth in the secret room, now bathroom. But I was primed for this because I knew that's what others thought they had seen. And any movement outside the window, pigeons, etc., and there were plenty of them, could have caused that sensation. But what I found harder to explain were the strange knocks and bangs during the night, also the sound of the floorboards that woke me. When I woke, I was convinced that the floorboard noise had been really loud and really close, like right next to me, or weirdly coming from the wardrobe, but more on that later. Yet on the recording that I listened to the next morning, I actually couldn't hear the floorboards until I put my headphones on. So at first I thought I was going to cover a whole section on the show today about how knowing what you've dreamt and actually what's real is incredibly difficult, because I thought I had proof that I must have dreamt that floorboard sound, even though I was convinced I was awake when I heard it. Then once I had the headphones on and I could actually hear the floorboards on the recording, although it was much quieter sound than I remembered, I realised that that was what had woken me, and I had been awake when I heard at least some of the floorboard noise. And my room did not share a wall with any other guest rooms. Two walls were outside facing, one into a courtyard. Above me was part of the manager's apartment. Along the side was the empty function room, and then round the corner the stairs. At the far end of my room, part of the Minster Suite living room probably overlapped above. I talked all this through with the barman, but even he admitted that it's hard to pin down the exact geography of the building. But he was pretty sure that apart from the stairs and landing, my room backed onto places not used, and was above the kitchens that were certainly empty from 12:30 onwards, and really shouldn't have been at all noisy. Some of the noises could be explained by either the manager or Josh and his mum in the Minster Suite walking about. But at 2 and 4am, when I heard what sounded like furniture being dragged, Josh and his mum were not up, and we doubted the manager was. Also, to me, the sounds sounded like they were coming from below me or from the function room. The bangs I heard all seemed to come from behind the wardrobe, which was to my right from lying in bed. Behind the wardrobe and the wall was the empty function room. And this might be a good place to join Rob Kirkup, because he also had some interesting experiences in Catherine's room back in 2011, connected with that wardrobe and the function room beyond it. So sit back and enjoy my chat with one of the UK's leading ghost experts. Rob has written over a dozen books collecting together ghost stories from all over the north of Britain and beyond. He has investigated many places around the country, especially in the northeast and around the world. He has a keen eye for a good story and a passion for history. Rob also has a great podcast called How Haunted. Links, as always, are in the show description and on our blog at weirdinthewade.blog. Rob, thank you so much for joining me today on Weird in the Wade to talk about all things ghostly, particularly in York.
Mm-hmm. My pleasure.
But the first thing that I really wanted to ask you about, Rob, is for those listening who haven't heard How Haunted, your podcast, or haven't read your books, I wondered if you could just sort of introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about how you ended up being the sort of Northeast's expert on ghosts.
I wouldn't go that far, but I'd love to. And I'll try and keep this brief, because I could easily talk about this. I mean, I'm talking about me, aren't I? It's my favourite topic of conversation. But I got into the paranormal as a kid, the same as most other people, purely out of curiosity. Picking up those books and being at that age where you didn't know what was real and what wasn't. Reading about ghosts. And it was just an interest that stayed with us. But it was quite fortuitous how I turned my interest into something that I actively pursued. And I apologise for anybody who's listened to my podcast who may have heard us talk a little bit about this before, but in 2002, I was working in a job where I was doing data entry, and I couldn't talk to the people sitting around us, but I could listen to music, like a Walkman or something like that. And I used to record onto cassettes, if anyone remembers them.
Yes, I do.
A late night local radio show to the Northeast where it was like a phone-in show, because I found that if I listened to music, I dozed off because it was such a boring job, but this show was famous in the Northeast for years for its spooky specials, and Halloween in particular. And in 2002, the guy who hosted the show said, this year for Halloween, I want people to write in if you're interested in being sent somewhere and you can be our on-the-spot ghost hunters. And I thought, that sounds like a real adventure. Why don't I write a letter? And if I get picked, great. And if I don't, then nothing ventured, nothing gained. And he said a couple of days later that he'd had something like 5,000 letters and he was only going to pick 10 people. This was the most listened to talk show on the radio outside of London. So it was very, very popular. It was on the radio in the Northeast for over 40 years. Alan Robson's Night Owls.
I lived in Yorkshire. Yeah, we could get Night Owls in Yorkshire as well. Yeah.
Alan Robson, since Night Owls ended, he does a YouTube thing now where he goes off and does ghost hunts. And so he's still doing it. But he picked me. I got a letter through the door from Alan Robson. And Halloween 2002, I found myself with a few of my pals I'd rounded up from university to make my first ever team. Mm-hmm. And we were off to Tork and Tarn, which is a lake over Cumbria Way.
Yeah.
Because the month before, it was in the local newspapers in the area that I think it was something like 26 people rings a bell, had seen in broad daylight, they'd been eating an ice cream and feeding the ducks. And they'd seen the bloody apparition of a woman walk out of the water and just disappear in front of them. So Alan sent us to this place in the middle of nowhere to do a ghost hunt, my first ever one. And nothing really happened, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I thought, well, why don't I do more? So I did more. And then I ended up putting a website together. And then one of my friends said, why don't you write a book? Mm-hmm. So I got in touch with some, I thought, well, I can't write a book. But one random Sunday, I thought, you know what, why can't I write a book? If I don't try, I'll never know. So I just emailed a load of publishers that I could find online that had published stuff to do with the paranormal in the past. And yeah. I got an email back from the History Press saying, okay, well, let's have a chat. And I got a book deal, and I've had 13 books published today, including one about the city that we're going to end up talking about. Mm-hmm. But then the podcast came about. Again, it was quite fortuitous. I ended up writing for a retro video games magazine, which started in 2021 and it ended at the end of 2022. But as a magazine, we ended up doing a podcast, and I thoroughly enjoyed chatting with the guys, and I didn't edit it or anything like that. It was done by a lad called Alex. But when that ended, I was out with my favourite people in the world and we're having a chat. And 5 minutes later, I'd come up with this idea to have a go at doing a podcast. And I went home and I watched some YouTube videos on how to edit.
Yeah.
Because that was my biggest concern. And then I had a go, and I never expected to make it past episode one, to be perfectly honest. But I think my most recent episode was episode 76.
Yeah.
Or something like that. That's how it came to be. And my podcast has... it's proven way more popular than I ever imagined. As you said, it's called How Haunted, and every episode I focus on somewhere, normally in the UK, but I do have the occasional jaunt overseas.
You went to Ireland recently, didn't you?
Yeah, I've just done a 3-part ghost trail of County Cork. But I mean, this is a bit of an exclusive, but August is going to be a month where I'll look at places in the Czech Republic. Just started looking at, there's loads of really good places overseas. So I'm trying to do them in like little fits and like little, like I'll do a month of places in America, for example, or whatever it may be. So yeah, normally I'm doing somewhere in the UK, but I sometimes have guests on or polter guests, as I call them, because I love a,
yeah,
I love a pun. But I don't do it very often, but I have, in the last 2 weeks, I've spoke to Richard Felix,
mm-hmm.
who was a lovely bloke, and recurring guest Emma from the Weird Wheelchair Blog's been on again. I think I've had her on, I think this is the third time we've had a chat. No, it's the fourth. We did Stonehenge,
mm-hmm.
Woodchester Mansion, and the Ancient Ram Inn. So this is the fourth time, and me and her were chatting about Avebury. So that's coming out in June, just in time for the summer solstice. But yeah, I try and mix it up. So I do like themed months every now and then. So like, this is again a bit of an exclusive. I'm probably giving away stuff that I don't really want to give away, but I'm just talking. October, I've already worked out what I'm doing for Halloween at October, and it's going to be Vampire Month.
Oh, fantastic.
Culminating in a big, big Halloween special. So I'm already working on that.
That's amazing. And thank you for so many exclusives.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff that I'm very excited about. Like,
yeah, I bet.
I do, for me Patreons, I do a monthly episode where I've done a ghost hunt, and I do an episode where I talk through what happened, the mm-hmm. history, the ghost stories, and what happened when I was there.
Yeah.
But then I drop in audio on the night so people can hear what happened. And the weekend just... Not the weekend, just gone the weekend before, I found audio from investigations I did in 2011 and 2012 that I thought was lost forever. Oh. So I've just been listening back through that. And it's like I found it on an old hard drive in the loft. And it was like Indiana Jones speaking out the Ark of the Covenant or something. I never expected to hear that again. So I'm quite excited to
That's
do
amazing.
Something with that.
Yeah, it is great when you stumble across those kind of things that you thought you'd lost.
Happy accident.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. The next question that I have is actually going to be about York, because, of course, this episode that I'm putting out is about my trip to York. I challenged myself to a haunted house challenge. I spent 2 nights in the Chamber of Trembling Madness. And I also spent a night in the Golden Fleece, and it's the Golden Fleece that we're kind of going to focus on today. But before we get on to thinking about the Golden Fleece, I wondered if you had any thoughts on why is York just so rich with ghost stories? Because there are other very historical towns. I mean, if you think of somewhere like Durham, it's equally old and venerable, and it does have wonderful ghost stories, but it's not the same as York. York is just so well known for hauntings. And I just wondered if you had any theories about why that is.
It's a good question. Since you asked me that, when I was having a think about this in preparation for this interview, it's a really, really good question. And I mean, there's a few things. Like, I think it's probably culmination of a few things coming together and really working in York's favour in terms of this. In the same way that maybe you could say, if we were talking about Scotland, you could say the same about somewhere like Edinburgh when compared to anywhere else in Scotland. But I mean, I think if I go back to 2002, Jason Carl, who was on Most Haunted in the first series, he created a group called Ghost Research Foundation International.
Yeah.
And he declared that York is the most haunted city, not just in the UK, but anywhere on earth.
Yeah.
With 504 recorded hauntings. I don't know how on earth he counted all of them up to get to there, like whether he held a census or something.
Yeah.
But I think that just goes to show how many stories York has. And I mean, as you walk like the ancient cobbled streets and the Snickerways, and you walk down somewhere like Shambles, and you see the fact that all of the buildings aren't level and they're all sticking out, and you can just sense the history. It's got, you know, the Vikings were there, the Romans were there, the Saxons were there, the Normans were there. All of the streets have got old Viking names.
Yeah.
You've got the Jorvik Viking Centre. I think it's probably because York lean so heavily into its history, and probably more so it embraces its reputation for the paranormal. You've got how many ghost walks is there in York?
I know there's about, well, I think I counted at least 5, and that wasn't doing a very good search.
There's
literally just, you know, there's more than that, I'm sure.
There is. And if you go to somewhere like Durham, how many ghost walks does Durham have? I think it's got one and it runs sporadically. The thing about York as well is it's good for a ghost walk route. You could plan out a brilliant ghost walk. But I mean, I'm in Newcastle, as anyone listening might be able to tell from the accent. And if I planned out a route, a ghost walk in Newcastle, most of the buildings that you'd want to talk about, like the castle that Newcastle's named for, is 20-minute walk away from where everybody's going to be who's in the city centre up the top end of town. So I think York leans in. But I mean, I know you went to the ghost merchants as well.
I did.
I think everywhere you go, like York Minster.
Yeah.
And then you walk around the corner and you've got College Street.
Yeah.
And you've got the horrific ghost story there. And then you've got the Treasurer's House.
So I think you're right. When it comes to York, I think one of the really key things is because it's a walled city, nowhere's more than 10 minutes away within those walls. You know, you can get from one place to the other. And I think that just kind of also lends itself for the collecting of the stories, the remembering them, the, like you say, being able to do a ghost tour and a ghost walk really easily. Yeah. Because if you actually go out into outside of those walls, there are still plenty of other ghost stories as well for York.
Yeah.
But if you just concentrate on the historic part of York right in the middle, there seems to be literally a ghost story for almost every building. And it is amazing. And I think you're right. Edinburgh is probably the only other, if you think about both the old town and the new town in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
It's another city that has got that history and has also got that abundance of ghost stories. And I think they're the only two that I can think of, but they're both walkable. They're both cities where you can literally walk anywhere in about 10 minutes and come across lots of ghost stories.
Yeah. And both of them have got, that's why both of them have got lots of ghost walks.
Yes.
And I mean, I've written a book about York and a book about Edinburgh. They're just unbelievable cities. And a lot of my listeners are based in America.
Yes.
And it's because they can't believe the history that we've got, you know. So I do think we're spoiled.
We really are. We're really lucky. So before we talk about the Golden Fleece, I did wonder if you had a favourite York ghost story.
I do. It's not one that most people would go for. And to be fair, the first ghost walk I ever went on in my life was in York.
Mm.
It was probably when I was about 14, 15, and I was in York with my brother and my parents. So that was 30 years ago. I'm giving my age away, but here I'm 45. And it was a ghost walk called the Haunted Walk of York.
Yeah.
But it doesn't exist anymore. It stopped in 2013. So I don't know if there's anybody still telling this story, but it's a story I was told then, and it's stayed with us ever since. And it's the story of St. Saviour's Church on St. Saviour Gate, which is now today known as Dig. It houses an archaeological-themed visitor attraction, which is run by the same people who do the Jorvik Viking Museum. So if you buy a ticket for one, you can get a ticket for both.
You can get in the other.
But it's, I don't know if it's on any ghost walks anymore. It's an incredible story, and it's got a very gory origin. So I don't know how much detail I'll go into, because I don't want to, if somebody's eaten something, I don't want to put them off. But I mean, obviously the time of the Vikings was a horrible, brutal time where some of the stuff that happened was unbelievable, unspeakable compared to the life that we live today. And the reason this story came about is because the Vikings did something to a Christian called Blood Eagling, which I won't go into.
No.
If anyone wants to find out what it is, they can Google it. Just don't do it while you're having your tea.
Yeah.
And they did this in front of the people of York at the top end of St. Saviour's Gate, at a place outside of an apartment complex called Bieber House, which is at the top of St. Saviour Gate where it meets St. Saviour's Place. And they did this to this Christian, which obviously cost him his life. And the Christians wanted to get their own back on the Vikings. So it's St. Saviour's Church. They grabbed a Viking who was passing, and they did something called Dane skinning, which you don't need to think too hard about to work out what that is. But basically they skinned this poor Viking. I say poor Viking. They skinned this Viking alive while keeping the skin from his body in one sheet. And then they'd nail the skin to the church door to let the other Vikings know, don't do it again, because this is what we'll end up doing to your number. And ever since then, there's been ghost stories about this Viking supposedly haunting the church. And again, I say supposedly because how true is this? We don't know.
Mm.
Then the ghost story comes about, which has got its origins in the early 1950s. So there was a local man who was fascinated by the paranormal,
mm-hmm.
and went to the church and said, "Hiya, I'm really interested in ghosts. Can I come and do a ghost hunt at the church and spend the night here and see if I can see the Viking?" And this was an active church at the time. And the vicar said, "Well, I mean, I might be paraphrasing, but he said, no, of course you're not. It's a church. You can't come and look for ghosts in the middle of the night." But this young guy wouldn't give up. So he started going along and attending service.
Right.
And then asking the vicar again, "Can I come and do a ghost hunt?" And eventually the vicar said, "Look, yes, you can.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to lock you in. I'll go home to my vicarage. And then I'll come and let you out the next morning. And then I never want to hear anything about it again."
Yeah.
The guy said, "Lovely. Probably. Yes, let's do that. More than happy to do that." So he turned up with his camera, a notepad and a pen.
Mm-hmm.
The vicar locked him inside and went home. The following morning, the vicar went back to the church. And upon opening the door, he immediately knew something wasn't quite right, as the man's camera was in the doorway, smashed to pieces.
Mm-hmm.
The vicar entered and walked around the church. And when he got towards the back of the church, he found the notepad torn apart, pages scattered all over. But there was no sign of the man at all. So he climbed into the higher reaches of the church and he still couldn't see him.
Mm-hmm.
But at the highest point of the church, he spotted him sat down. And the vicar approached him and said, "Oh my goodness, I wondered where you were." And the man was watching him every step of the way, but he didn't speak back.
Yeah.
And when the vicar reached him, he realised why. The man was dead. And when the ghost hunter's cause of death was established, he'd literally been frightened to death.
Mm.
So the vicar moved to another parish.
Yeah.
And then before long, the church was closed down and now it's dig. But that's a ghost story I was told, as I say, probably 30 years ago. And I'm not sure if anybody's still telling that story. I tell it in my Halloween 2022 episode, which was a ghost walk of York. But that story, I remember standing outside of that church on like a twilight on a like late summer's night being told that story. And I was just, couldn't believe me. Like, I mean, it really, really left an impression on us. And I thought, I want to know more about all of this stuff.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, that's my favourite story.
Yeah. I mean, that is a fantastic ghost story.
I like bedding as well.
Yeah.
All the stuff to do with bedding. But that's something people can Google.
It's interesting because I'd read about the Dane skin on the door, but I'd not obviously heard anything about your story about the 1950s paranormal investigator. And it made me look up about the Dane skins. And it turns out there's a couple of other churches in the UK that claim to have had a door to the church which had a Dane skin on it. And basically, I think one of them was in Kent. But yes, it's very gory. But it is interesting that it seems to be quite a popular folklore story over the ages in different parts of the country that happened. And it does make you wonder if, you know, surely it must have happened somewhere for these stories to exist around parts of the country.
Yeah.
But yes. That was a brilliant ghost story. Thank you so much, Rob.
That's my pleasure.
That was excellent. And yes, I did listen to most of your ghost walk and I can definitely recommend it. But I don't remember hearing that story because I think that's the first time I've heard it. So, and I was listening to your ghost walk and focusing on the bits that I knew where I would be going to, you see. But I have a confession to make, and I did it on purpose, which was I didn't listen to your episode, which is currently on your Patreon, about the Golden Fleece until after I'd stayed there. And I did that for a couple of reasons. One, I already knew quite a few of the stories. It's hard not to know the stories about the Golden Fleece when you go to stay there. And so I didn't want to know too much. You know, I wanted to know as little as possible before I went and stayed and then, you know, go there with an open mind. And actually, what's really interesting is some of the things that your investigation highlighted, I can kind of corroborate happened to me as well. But we'll come on to that in a moment. But I went in,
I was quite shocked when I then listened to it afterwards, and I'm like, oh gosh, that's exactly what happened to me. So can you tell us a little bit about your visit to the Golden Fleece? I know you did your investigation, I think it was in 2011, but I mean, I don't know if you've actually just been in there at other times as well, but I'd love to hear about, you know, the Golden Fleece and what you made of it.
I mean, I've only investigated it once, and that, you're right, that was in a long time ago now, 2011. I've been in many, many times because I think I was saying just before we started our recorded chat, I'm not too far away from York. So York is somewhere that I go at least once a year. Like I'll always go for the Christmas market, but I'll try and get there a couple of times a year because it's only a 90-minute drive from where I am, and it's somewhere I'll never tire of going. And the Golden Fleece is somewhere I'll never tire of visiting. It's such a strange building. The fact that it's got no foundations, so it's really odd. I remember when I was in there for my investigation in 2011, and we were going up the stairs, and one of our team, there's only four of us, one of our team, I think it was John, said, oh, watch out, there's a dodgy step there. And the guy who was giving us the tour around said, well, they're all dodgy. The building's like that. There's no foundations. It's just a weird place. And I mean, it's got an awful lot of character. The fact that it's got like a top bar and the back bar, and they're all over the place. And then you've got the four bedrooms as well. And there's a function room, which I don't know if you got a chance to go into, but that's a little bit of an odd space as well.
Yeah.
But I mean, my investigation, I knew it was kind of ill-fated from the off because, and I don't think I'm saying anything libelous by saying this, but when I arranged it, I made a payment to the person who owned the building. By the time I came to do the investigation, they'd sold it to somebody else, and I rang them up to say, oh, just to confirm, I'm coming along to do a ghost hunt. And they're like, I don't know what you're talking about.
No.
So yeah, these other people had me money, didn't pass on any information, so I had to try and sweet talk these people, and to be fair, they were good as gold, and they said, okay, well, we don't know if this is right or not, but yeah, come along and do a ghost hunt. So it was a really odd night. I don't know how much detail you want us to get into about what happened in certain rooms, but some of the oddest things that have happened to me in my life happened to me in that building. And if you've listened to the episode, you probably know what I'm talking about, but the fact that we went towards the end of the night, we went in the back bar.
Yeah.
And I think there's only four, as I said, there's four of us in my team, and one of them is my brother, my younger brother, Tom. And I'm sure he said, you go in that dark corner over there, like pitch black.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, I'll go in the dark, creepy corner. And when I went in the corner, there was something on the seats, and I couldn't make out what it was in the darkness. I didn't want to put my torch on and like ruin my night vision. But it was almost like there was a pile of clothes or blankets or something like that on the seat. And as I was staring at this pile of whatever it was, trying to make out what it was, two eyes looked at us from in amongst it all.
Yeah.
And I had no idea what to make of it. And the others came over and I said, look, there's something there. Like there's something going on. And we just ran away. Rather than try and work out who it was, because it was probably, dare I say, somebody sleeping on the seat or something like that, this was in the back bar, so we ran away to the top bar to try and gather our thoughts. And then when we went back, there wasn't anything there anymore. But when we were going to, I think we're going back to the function room, a woman dressed all in black walked right past us at about 1:30 in the morning, and one of the guys, John, said hello.
Yeah.
And this lady didn't acknowledge us, she didn't even break stride, just kept on walking. Then we found out that we were locked in the pub, and we were the only people in the building.
Yeah.
We looked everywhere. There was nobody else in the building, and it was 3:00 in the morning, and we just couldn't get out. We managed to almost break, and I don't want to say break out because I'll end up with somebody knocking on the door, but we managed to get out of a back door that was that had like a Land Rover or something parked right up against a wall, and we couldn't really get out easily, but we managed to escape the Golden Fleece, which seemed to have us trapped in for the night.
Yeah,
it was the oddest night, and I'm sure that a lot of the stuff that happened can be rationalized away by people being in the building, but when it got to 3:00 in the morning and we were trying to find how to get out, We looked in every door, we looked in every room. There was nobody else in there. But as I say, a woman walked past us. I saw a couple of eyes staring at us from underneath something on a chair.
Yeah.
It's just a really, really, really weird night. Mm-hmm. And every time I go in, it is an odd place, the fact you've got a skeleton sitting at the bar.
Yes.
With a nurse and a drink. Yeah. And a bit like a lot of places in York, they buy in and they embrace the fact that they've got this reputation of being haunted, because there's a lot of people, I mean, it's good for business, isn't it?
It is.
There's a lot of people who go in for a drink just so they can say they've had a drink in the Golden Fleece.
Exactly.
But it's a very, very odd building. It's a strange place. And it turned out really old. I mean, we're talking about old buildings. I mean, it's mentioned as early as, I think, 1503 in the city's archives. And it's a very, very old place.
It is. And so I was staying in Catherine's room.
Yeah.
And it's the room that actually, if you, because obviously since I've stayed there, I've gone and had a look at quite a lot of the videos and listened to people talking about it. And they tend to focus on either the shambles or the Minster suite up at the top. And and currently those are the only three rooms that they're sort of letting out as
space.
But Catherine's room, of course, is interesting as well. It's got the hidden room that was that they now use as a bathroom. But what happened to me, and I will have discussed this earlier in the podcast, so everybody knows what it was that happened. The first thing to say is the staff told us all, we go home at 12:30. There is no one in the building. And so we all had to have a evacuation kind of run through of what to do if there was an emergency. The people staying in the hotel would be there by ourselves.
Okay. And what they didn't get anything like that.
Yeah. What they didn't tell me at the time was that actually there is a flat attached to the pub, which actually would have been above the function room.
Okay.
And that's where nowadays the bar manager lives. So the mobile phone number they gave us, if anything happened, would be to call him. And also if we evacuated and all had to go and stand outside because there was a fire, he was there and he would come to see us. But it's not connected to the, you know, he can't get from his flat into the pub without going round and coming in through, you know, the front door or the back door. But anyway, so we were all told that from 12:30, it would just be us in the pub, just the guests. And sure enough, I was awake at about 12:30 and I heard them switch off the extractor fan in the kitchen and I heard the doors going as they were leaving. And I fell back asleep. And at about 1:45, I was woken by what to me sounded like the loudest creaking of the floorboards that I, you know, it was like somebody was right next to me in the room creaking backwards and forwards on the floorboards. And it woke me up. Now, I was recording throughout the night. I was using one of those sleep apps and it records. And it did pick it up, but it was actually quite faint. It was not as loud as my sort of sleeping mind obviously thought it was, but there was definitely a sound there. And it was as if it was coming from the wardrobe. So in the bedroom's very similar to, I think, how it was set out back in 2011, so that you've got the big double bed and then, or back then, I think it might have been two beds in the Catherine's room. And then you've got a wardrobe that's in the alcove. Now, when you were in there on your recording from 2011, that's where you could hear knocking and banging coming from. And I also recorded, I think, 7 knocks or bangs during the night. And they all sounded like they were coming from either the wardrobe or just behind the wardrobe in St. Catherine's room, or Catherine's room, they call it now. They've dropped the saint. And it was so weird because that's exactly what you reported, and that's exactly where I thought the sounds were coming from. So I asked the bar staff the next morning, and there was no one in the function room, which is what's next to Catherine's room on the other side. Mm-hmm. No one in there. The people that were staying in the room above and then the shambles suite, they were all down at breakfast at the same time. So I interviewed everyone, and actually that was the one night when none of them had left their rooms. So they'd all been asleep. And the night before, a couple of them had actually gone out and wandered around at 4 a.m. to see if they could see anything spooky. But actually, the night that I was staying there, we were all in our rooms and they all said, no, we weren't out and about walking around. I did also hear, and I know this is often reported, what sounded to me like something being dragged along the floor. And I know that quite often at 4:00 a.m, people report hearing furniture moving.
I also smelt toast being made at about when I woke up at 1:45. It was such a strong smell of toast. It actually made me hungry. And I asked the next morning, would there have been any staff around making toast at that time? And he was like, no, I honestly, there wouldn't be. So why I could smell toast, I do not know.
It's a strange one. We didn't get that. I mean, everything you've mentioned about the knocking, there was four of us in that room. So power to you for being in there on your own. But we, that's exactly what we got. We were saying, is there anybody there? If so, let us know. And when we were getting knocks, they always sounded like they were coming from inside or behind the wardrobe. That's exactly what I wrote when my book came out, like over a decade ago now. And we were saying, like, can you give us two knocks? And we were getting two knocks in return. Three knocks, we're getting three knocks back. And every time it sounded like it was in or behind the wardrobe.
Yeah.
It was the most convincing responses to questions I think we've ever had on an investigation, and I've done a lot, but it was in that room specifically that that's what we were getting over and over and over again.
It's just, I'm glad I hadn't listened to your episode before I went, because you know it would be easy to say, well, I was expecting it to come from the wardrobe. And of course, I'd heard nothing about the wardrobe at all. No one had mentioned that. And any, I just read the stories, you know, the Canadian and the little Victorian boy. Somebody might pick your pocket in the bar. So I hadn't on purpose, really. The only thing I knew about Catherine's room was the fact that it had got that hidden room that they discovered that they turned into the ensuite. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people saw a woman standing at the window. So those were the only two things I knew about Catherine's room. And so, yeah, then when I listened to your episode and I heard you saying about the knocking and, oh gosh, that made me jump. Somebody just walked past the house laughing and it made me jump. My office I'm in is right at the front of our house, so there's a right in front, and they were just walking past laughing and it made me jump. Sorry.
Because we're talking about ghosts.
I know, this is it. And it's just getting to that point now where the sun's setting and I'd be thinking about maybe putting on my light if we were doing this as a video, not just
a video. I'm sitting in darkness now.
But it's been absolutely brilliant talking with you, Rob, and I'm just so grateful that you agreed to do this. I really am.
My pleasure.
Oh, thank you. I will put links in the show notes to your podcast and to on the blog. I will put links where listeners can find your books. But thank you so much, Rob, for coming along and talking to us today. It's just been fascinating.
No, honestly, my pleasure. I'm honoured to have been invited along to have a chat with you.
Thank you.
That's quite right.
Thank you again to Rob for sharing his stories of Haunted York with us. Check out the show notes and blog for links to Rob's podcast, How Haunted, and where to find his books. And I'd like to thank Josh and the other guests of the Golden Fleece for chatting with me over breakfast. It was really lovely to meet you, and I hope you enjoyed the episode. Before we finish this episode, I'd just like to remind you that on Wednesday, the 1st of May at 7 p.m. London time, I'll be holding a live YouTube talk all about my haunted house challenge in York, including my two-night stay at the Chamber of Trembling Madness. You'll find out if I really did have a premonition when staying there, as well as what woke me at 4 a.m. in the morning. Did my sleep recorder really pick up the recording of a ghost? It claims it did. I'll also talk a little bit about the Biggleswade Tunnels, a two-part episode all about the tunnels and new ghost stories linked to them will be out at the end of May. You can also ask me questions on the YouTube event, so please get your questions ready or send them in advance to me on the socials or at weirdinthewade@gmail.com. Check the show description where you're listening now for more details. I'll also be announcing on the live stream the launch of the Weird in the Wade Patreon. I know some of you have been asking for this for a long time. So yes, all the details will be announced on Wednesday and a blog will go up as well to tell you all about the Patreon and how you can join. And don't forget that the merch shop is now open. I know, there's loads happening, and it's all in celebration of 1 year of Weird in the Wade. I couldn't have done this without you all, my lovely listeners. And I know it's hard to believe that it's a year since the Haunted Pound Stretcher was released, but on the 1st of May, it will be exactly a year. And what a year it's been. I hoped I might get 50 downloads in the first month, and possibly, if I was lucky, 500 in the first year if I kept going. And actually, I wasn't sure if I would. I didn't think anyone would be interested in Biggleswade's Haunted Pound Stretcher or anything else really to do with Biggleswade. So the response has been amazing. We're now way over 25,000 downloads, and I cannot thank you enough for listening and for your support on the socials. It means the world to me. Thank you so much. Team Weird, you are and we are the best. I'd like to send out special thanks today to Paul, Tess, Ian P, Quiet Snowfall, Kate and Elfie for your support on Ko-fi. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. I loved my haunted house challenge in York, and I spent most of it recording, writing and posting on the socials all about it, as well as being bothered by things going bump in the night. Your contributions made that trip possible. Thank you so much. And there is lots more to come from my visit to York, including, of course, my time in the Chamber of Trembling Madness. There's also my visit to the Treasurer's House and my visit to the Shrine of Margaret Clitheroe on the Shambles. So keep listening over the next few months. There will be more episodes released. Some of them will be bonus episodes for the Patreons, and others will be released for everybody to hear. Today's episode was researched, written, produced and presented by me, Nat Doig. Theme music is by Tess Savagir. All additional music and sound effects are from Epidemic Sounds.